Welcome to Sustainability Bridges, a URCIF podcast aimed at building bridges between policymakers, investors, academics, and civil society around the theme of sustainable investing. URCIF is the leading pan-European association promoting sustainable finance and sustainable investing at European level. In this podcast, the Executive Director of URCIF will invite distinguished guests for a 30-minute conversation on current events shaping the sustainable investing community.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Victor Van Horen, I'm the Executive Director of URCIF. For this episode, I'm honored and delighted to be joined by the Executive Director of ESMA, Mrs. Natasha Kaznav. Together, we are going to discuss about ESMA's role, what they see as important developments in this area, and probably also the very recent sustainable finance roadmap they published. Dear Natasha, thank you very much for accepting our invitation and being with us today.
Good afternoon, and thank you very much for inviting me. Delighted to be here.
Obviously, ESMA recently published a very comprehensive and ambitious sustainable finance roadmap. And I think maybe to start off, it would be very helpful for our listeners to understand a bit what ESMA sees for itself as a role in this space and in helping the European policymakers in this agenda they've rolled out over the last couple of years.
No, thank you very much. I'm very happy to walk you through that. So first, if we go back to 2019, sustainability has been included in the founding regulation of ESMA. So it is really part of our mandate now to take into consideration sustainability in everything we do. As soon as 2020, ESMA put out a new sustainable finance strategy to explain how it would incorporate these factors within all its activities. And as you see the policymaking develop and the framework developing and also the market developments, now we have defined an ambitious roadmap, as you were describing, for 2022 to 2024 to try and streamline and clarify what are the areas where we are really expected to deliver in the years to come and focus. In general, the way we see our contribution, and I'll come back to the roadmap in a minute, is that we are one part of the system, one contributor to the definition and the elaboration of a sustainable finance framework. We try to help the legislators in designing a comprehensive framework that will help in the end and for an orderly transition to a more sustainable economy. So how we do that? There are a number of areas, and we contribute through the single rulebook, for example, where we provide technical advice, technical standards. But here, at the point in time where we are very much focused on supervisory convergence, and I'm sure we'll discuss that again further on. And in particular, we've designed this roadmap with a way of saying there is so much going on. Where can we bring the most value? Where is the biggest need? And what can the securities regulator bring? Three big areas in our roadmap for the years to come. First, fighting greenwashing and focusing on transparency. And here the area is, the objective here is to define fundamental features. So what exactly are we talking about? What are the proper supervisory responses? What are the expectations in terms of disclosures? And how can we maintain trust in the system and making sure that we have transparency and comparability in the system? A very important priority. The second one is to be humble and accept that this is a new area for many people in the financial sector. And so we need to build capacity, both us at ESMA, but also the national competent authorities. So how can we help in building gradually more capacity, more awareness? And finally, the third building block is monitoring and assessing, analyzing ESG risks. We've already incorporated in our risk assessment a new environmental risk so that it's much more embedded in what we do. And we also look at climate risk through stress tests. We've been asked also by the Commission to conduct a one-off stress test that we will be conducting with the other ESAs. And this will really teach us a lot on how these factors play into the market and what risk they represent. So this is a little bit where we are. And of course, there are other areas we're looking at in particular, and I'll be very brief on these. In addition to the roadmap, we continue our regular work, and that is providing guidance on the SFDR, so the Sustainable Finance Disclosure Regulation, where we have been continuously providing guidance and there is still more to come. We are also active on the corporate sustainability reporting side. So we are active there. We're an observer on the EFRAG and trying to see what's happening there. We'll have to come up with a formal opinion. And finally, on the distribution side, we're looking at our guidelines on suitability. So also on the interaction between the retail investor and the distributor. So all in all, quite a lot going on. but this is a little bit how we see our contribution to the overarching framework.
Thank you very much. Thank you. It's very comprehensive, and there are many, many moving pieces at the same time. I guess one thing I think we'd be particularly interested to understand a bit more is, if you look at sustainability, it seems that beyond the, you know, maybe traditional mandates of supervisors, which focus on investor protection and maybe to a certain degree financial stability, now it seems that supervisors will be expected to verify, you know, things like total greenhouse gas emissions by issuers or how their report does sustainability variables. I can imagine that this can be a little bit of a challenging capacity, as you say, because it is looking at different things and appreciating different complexities than the traditional financial reporting. How are you building that capacity, or what do you see as the challenges there?
That's a huge and a steep learning curve for everyone. At the same time as the market is adapting and gradually has been learning also how to report on different indicators, you had all the work on the TCFD in Europe, the TEG. So gradually we've been learning, and it's really impressive the speed at which we've been progressing in this area. If you compare to financial accounting, for example, now we are already developing standards in the sustainability space when 10 years from now, nobody was talking about this. So it's quite impressive how this has been done, but it does require necessarily that issuers, regulators, but also other stakeholders in the ecosystem, everybody will have to step up to this challenge and make sure that gradually we learn. So a lot of work for people who are informed and can train. And of course, we're recruiting colleagues, we're going to training sessions, we're trying to build that capacity for the national authorities, certainly an area where there's still a lot to be done.
Okay, no, thank you. So you've mentioned, obviously, I think SFDR, and SFDR is that really the talk of this industry. And maybe for better or for worse, these categories of products, you know, we call them Article 6, 8, 9, seems to have developed in this common language for the sustainable investment industry. Obviously, maybe the framework wasn't entirely designed for that initially. Do you have any thoughts on where the market is going? Is it the right thing? Do we need to adjust that a little bit?
So maybe first, I think to acknowledge what you just said, that a regulation that was clearly designed in the first instance as a transparency regulation, so really putting the information out there, providing disclosure for then investors to make informed decisions and any stakeholders to be able to manipulate the information, clearly has been taken now for as quality labels. So now we see very much the market structuring around that. And that actually creates problems, because what you call Article 8 is actually a very broad category in terms, and it was just designed to say, if in any way you refer to sustainability, then you are in Article 8, please provide information. But if it's used as a label or as a qualification, then you have a very diverse set of products there that are not really comparable. So that's a very big challenge. Same for Article 9, that's supposed to be very demanding. And we're here also, we see some challenges in the understanding. So certainly from our perspective, something that needs to be looked at. We hope that the very significant amount of work that we've done in the area of disclosures and mandatory disclosures will help provide more comparability, will streamline also the understanding, the expectations out there. But certainly we also think that going ahead, we might need to consider further clarification. So one way to look at it could be to develop further standards or labels. This is something we need to consider as we move ahead. So in the short term, hopefully mandatory disclosure will help. And going ahead, we would hope that then we would have a bit more clarifications, potentially with labels. One thing to look at, I think, from our perspective is the scale. Because if we look at the figures, I think we had data from Morningstar recently that was saying that approximately 30% of the funds sold in the EU were Article 8, Article 9. So that is really a massive amount. And I think the assets under management, if I'm not mistaken, out of March was 4 trillion euros. So we are talking about a very significant market. We are talking about material figures. So we have a duty to make sure that the information out there is clear and understandable, and the investor knows whether he's investing and it will have an impact, or whether he's just investing in any regular product that just has an insignificant sustainability component to it. And that's very important from our perspective.
Indeed, because you mentioned, and I know that part of your roadmap is particularly tackling greenwashing, particularly, of course, with the need to protect the retail investor, which is often the less sophisticated type of investor. On the other hand, obviously, and we can't ignore that, there's a lot of data challenges for the investors to source the right data and the precise data from companies. So I can imagine that for you as coordinator of the supervisors, it can be a challenge to reconcile those two dynamics. So how do you go about that?
So for greenwashing, you have many angles to it. First, we need to understand that overarchingly, this is an investor protection angle. Why we are interested and why we talk about greenwashing is because at the end of the day, we want to make sure that individuals, we see many more EU citizens aware of the challenge. They want to contribute. They want to take part. We want to make sure that when they make that investment decision, they're not deceived and they are actually investing where they think they are investing. Greenwashing in general, and we need to work on a proper definition, but just in general term to give a sense, it's just a misalignment between the promise of the ESG feature and what actually the product or the firm is delivering. So that misalignment can create frustration, but it can create mistrust and then potentially really affect the whole change we're trying to operate and the ability of the investment community to contribute to financing this transition. So it's really key. It's really not to be a problem for the industry. It's a fundamental role of the regulators. We need to make sure that this works. And there's a very strong awareness in the supervisory community that we have a duty to respond to that need. So what we're trying to do here is we are trying to work with the national supervisors to make sure we have a common understanding of what the requirements are, of what we understand by the concept of greenwashing, of how the current regulation operates, what is expected, and how it's actually enforced on the ground. So as much as possible, we create this level playing field, this common understanding in how we supervise these markets. And then in addition, you have the, there will be work done on the definition of greenwashing itself. And finally, I think there's also a dimension of understanding for the end investor. So what you said about the lack of data, we need to make sure on the one hand that the information is clear, simple, understandable for the investor so that he can actually reconcile his intention and what's proposed, and here the advisors will play a key role. And then it's true we have this issue of lacking data for the moment. So that's why we need to work with the national regulators to see what kind of guidance we can provide, how far can we go. On this particular point, we've been calling for a regulation, for more information on data, for a proper framework. It's the duty also of the firms to make sure that the information they give is appropriate. But we're conscious also, all of us, that this is an area that's moving very fast, where we do not yet, it will come with the corporate sustainability reporting, but it will come. In the meantime, we don't have it. So we also have to accept we're in this sort of transition situation. And so we want to make sure that in that phase, everybody is responsible, because at the end of the day, we want to make sure that we maintain that trust in the system.
Thank you. And so it's interesting because you mentioned indeed the importance of data providers. I think that everyone in this industry acknowledges that they're playing a critical and probably ever more growing role. And so I know Esma has made some comments on that publicly about having to look in this part of the market as well. Do you see any major challenges there from a supervisory perspective for yourself, looking at those data providers? Could you maybe tell us a little bit more about that?
Yes, certainly. So we've been talking about this framework. And so this framework is composed on different building blocks. And to get it right, we need to contribute and finally develop a comprehensive framework that will provide proper rules throughout the sustainable investment chain. So for the moment, we have requirements for disclosures for financial market participants and products. We are now having, we had an agreement with the legislators on corporate sustainability reporting. One area that we feel is missing is a proper framework for the ESG data ratings and providers. Why? Because this is one piece of the chain that is very much used precisely for information, to make informed decisions, to feed into the market. So I think the Commission is conscious about this. We have first publicly said that we thought this should be a proper framework, not to standardize the methodologies, but to have a proper framework on disclosure of the methodologies, clarity on how they are led. There's a lot of different information out there. It's fine to have different views on how you assess ESG factors in this area, but there should be proper transparency and regulation. So we're calling for that. And what we did is we launched a call for evidence this year to look at the market and how it's structured. And we very recently released the outcome of that analysis. And we found that there were a little bit less than 60 providers, mainly a very large number of small firms in the EU and a very small number of large firms that are non-EU based. A lot of them are very similar in nature to the type of role we have in credit ratings. So we just think that if you look at the way the framework is structured, this is the missing piece. We believe that the European Commission is fully aware. They've launched their own consultation, and we're hopeful that this building block will also find its way into the overall framework at the end.
Thank you very much. Now, I think maybe that's we looking at that and as this reliance on third party data providers and some of the headlines we've seen around the industry recently, which were some scandals, one could say. How worried are you that we may see more of those, or do you think that the industry is going in the right way? What's your perspective on this?
So I think, as I was saying, the industry is very material. So we are seeing a very strong demand, and this is driven both by retail and institutional investors. So this is a growing market. At the same time, there's also a lot of appetite from the provider side to develop products that meet this demand. And there's an overarching number of incentives to push the market in this direction of having more sustainable products, more ESG products, etc. So one would expect that with the scale, the risk of greenwashing is increasing. So in that context, the national authorities and ESMA were very, I wouldn't say concerned, but we are very aware of the importance of being on the ground and of making sure. So we see a little bit of a shift from pure interpretation, rulemaking focus to more supervision and enforcement. And this is also something that we're doing with the supervisors, so discussing practical cases, making sure we can bridge the gap and have common views on how we do that. And recently, so ESMA has been, we have a whole toolkit for that to work on convergence, but in particular, recently we published a supervisory briefing in the investment fund area, for example, to try and clarify a number of areas. So this is encouraging national authorities, for example, to look at names, because names convey a message to the investors. So making sure that there's an alignment between the name and what is exactly the engine and the investment strategy, or similarly to encourage national authorities to look at portfolio composition, and same thing, to check whether there's a good alignment there. So we do expect to see many more actions on the ground and supervisory efforts, just because we've moved already from the beginning, the disclosure or nascent market, to a very significant market, and the need to actually already rein in some conduct issues.
No, you're right, and I think it was PwC published a study showing that the most asset managers in Europe, the expectation was that they would stop issuing non-ESG products as of 2022 or 2023. So the market is clearly growing in that direction. So it's maybe what's interesting is to get your perspective. The EU was obviously the first one to move in this space, was the first one to adopt a kind of a regulatory framework on SFDR, on transparency for investment products. It's interesting to see now that we have seen the United Kingdom consider its own framework. We have seen now recently also the United States, the regulators there launching some rules. So what do you see as maybe what happens in the dialogue you have with your peers there? Because I assume you have a dialogue with your United Kingdom peers or US peers. Do you sense that there is a convergence on its way there, or do you think that there are different approaches, different perspectives? Can you share some of your thoughts here?
Certainly. So it's very high on the agenda of all our dialogues with our colleagues around the globe. So sustainable finance is really high on the agenda. We are very supportive of the work that is conducted by IOSCO in this area. So the IOSCO Sustainable Task Force, where there's a lot of initiatives there and a lot of discussions and trying also to bring us all together in terms of the expectations in the different areas. So ESMA is very active in that field. Generally, we consider that with global challenges, you need global responses. At the same time, we need to acknowledge that the EU has a particular leadership role here and a specific perspective. We are in advance in some of the way the framework has already been developed. So it's more, we're very focused on making sure we have interoperability, for example, on sustainability reporting. We're active and looking. We very much welcome the first draft standards that came out of the ISSB. That's a very positive development. Necessarily in the EU, it will go a little bit further, but we want to make sure it's interoperable. So the discussions we have are more, I think there's a general common agreement on the objective and what we're trying to achieve. And hopefully, as much as possible, we will be supporting convergence. And hopefully you can have a kind of a building block approach with a common baseline at international level and then potentially an additional specificity or in the EU.
Now, it's interesting because you say this convergence at international level. Obviously, maybe probably in the course of last year, at some point, we saw a number of European supervisors from different countries in Europe maybe consider adopting some of their own rules or some of their own guidances to complement the EU framework. What's your perspective on those? Because obviously, from an industry perspective, sometimes it can be correcting some of the limitations you might see, but on the other hand, it carries a certain risk of fragmentation of the market if the rules are too different. So how do you look at that?
So I think national authorities have felt the urge to provide some guidance to the market because they were facing issues on the ground. The regulation was still being developed. We were still providing guidance. There's still plenty of rounds of Q&As with the commission to clarify. And in the meantime, the market is there. And it's just the pace and the speed at which the market was transforming that led some national authorities to make these decisions. It's true, it makes it a little bit complex, and ESMA feels really strongly about its role in supervisory convergence. So we are bringing the supervisors around the table. We are leveraging on this experience of some of these regulators who have moved forward and who can bring to the table the rationale for their decisions and how to do that. And hopefully that will actually help us be stronger on the supervisory convergence front, that we can then reach common ground on what should be done next. It's a little bit part of the fact that the situation is what it is. As much as possible, we are working also with the other European supervisory authorities. We are working with our board members to try and as much as possible provide an EU perspective. It's in the interest of the investors. It's in the interest of all stakeholders and the firms themselves as well at the end of the day. But it's more this necessity by the evolution and the speed of the development that has led to the situation we're in today.
Okay, thank you very much. And that's, so we've covered a lot of ground already, but I think I can imagine coming back to this investor protection, which really comes very strongly at the core of your roadmap. And I know you've said you're busy developing those guidelines for suitability and for integrating this sustainability dimension there. Maybe one of the comments often made by people having to implement this is that this is a very technical framework with a lot of very technical terminology that's very specific. Yet on the other hand, there's this challenge of wanting to convince people in an easy way that this is potentially a good investment. How do you, what's your vision for bridging that gap or dealing with that challenge?
There are many aspects to this. I think if you just go to the core of your question on investor protection and how do we keep them on board with a very complex framework, It's for us to make it understandable. The situation is complex, the ESG factors is complex, the sustainability transition is complex, but we need to make it simple. So it's also a duty of all of us to transform this complexity as we define rules and templates and disclosures. At the same time, there's a very key role for financial advisors in this space. And financial advisors, they need to be able to be trained, they need to be able to understand, listen to the preferences of the investor, be able to cater to their needs. So we're very much working on the templates, on the trainings, and also we need to work on financial education and investor education more broadly for sustainability factors. So it's on all the fronts that we need to work to make sure that we are capable of making the complexity of the framework should not be an issue for the investor at the end of the day. The investor should just be able to say, I have a preference, I do not, I want to contribute in this way or not. And we hope that the amazing work that has been done in defining some of these templates, even if there are still a few questions that are considered a little bit difficult, it's in that direction in terms of the making it simple, making it visual, and trying to accompany the investors in this journey. So we hope that that will help.
So Natasha, looking at where we are now in the EU, on the one hand, you hear always that the challenge with data, market participants criticizing. On the other hand, there's a lot has been done. So how do you feel? Where do we stand on this journey on sustainable finance in the EU?
Yes, thank you for the question, because really I think we're often criticizing because, yes, the framework is not perfect, but I think we can be very proud in the EU of how far we've come and how much progress we've made. And we have a taxonomy in place. Yes, it has to be complemented, but it's there. It's a good framework. We have the SFDR. We're having more building blocks coming with corporate reporting. So yes, sometimes we overfocus on the complexities, the inconsistencies that have surfaced that we still need to address. And I'm not downplaying the importance of that. But it's very important also to be conscious that we are really clearly on that journey and clearly in the leadership role. People are looking to Europe to see how we're doing things. And that is also something we should be very proud of. So certainly a lot more to be done. Certainly we understand and we hear the criticism and the areas where we need to clarify and do better. But also a lot of progress has been achieved already.
And obviously you, ESMA also recently announced the creation of this consultative working group, combining, I think, stakeholders from industry, some academics, some more maybe civil society. What would you want, to hear more of from these stakeholders or from the financial industry in your work looking forward? Is there something we can do better to help you in this mission?
No, absolutely. And I should have said that at the outset. Actually, it's on this journey. Again, I said we have to be humble, and it's extremely important. In everything we do at ESMA, we try to engage and be open to contributions, make sure we understand the challenges in the market. In this area in particular, we feel very strongly that we need to be able to listen to stakeholders of all kinds. So you mentioned them. But in particular, in this area, we've just launched this consultative working group, and I'm extremely proud because I went to the kickoff meeting and I was amazed by the array of quality experts we have there. So academics, people coming from rating agencies, issuers, accounting people, rating people, and we have them all there, and they're going to help us be stronger. They'll help us identify issues. So we mentioned some inconsistencies, implementation challenges. Some of these firms also are cutting edge. They've been at the forefront of implementing and thinking about these issues, so they can also bring that knowledge to us, and it will help us be even faster or better in how we also think about our regulation. So no, I'm very proud that we have this group. It's very important for us. And I take the opportunity also to thank Eurostiff for the recent recommendations that you published, because even though we may not necessarily agree on everything, it's very important that we get those contributions, that we understand how you see the market that is fast evolving and where you see that more things can be done, that you have some concrete proposals to put on the table. And we very much welcome those contributions. They will help us get better and be faster in resolving issues.
Well, it's great to hear it on a positive note for EuroCEF as well. So thank you very much for that. I think we've covered much ground today. So Natasha, I want to thank you very much for taking your time to be with us today and enlightening our listeners about the incredibly important role that ESMA plays in this agenda. So thank you very much again, and we will hope to welcome you again on future editions of this podcast.
Thank you, Victor. Speak to you soon. Thank you.
It brings us to the end of this insightful conversation and the end of today's episode. Thank you very much for listening. Do not hesitate to like, follow and share this episode of Sustainability Bridges. EuroCEF will continue in the next episode to bridge the gap between the policymaking and the practice of sustainable investing with the help of distinguished guests. In the meantime, please visit our website and follow us on social media to stay tuned. See you next time for a new episode of Sustainability Bridges.